Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Milestone Hackers. I'm here with a very special guest by the name of Mubs. And Mubs, please state your full name. I don't want to attempt it because I don't want to say it correctly. So by all means.
My full name is Mubasher Iqbal, but everybody does call me Mubs. So just stick with that.
Stick with Mubs. Perfect. And is that a nickname just sort of came as you were younger or just like recently, or where did that nickname come from?
No. Yeah. So I've had that nickname since I was about 6 years old. So it's been around for a long time.
Holy moly. Yeah. It's quite some time. Okay. So just for the listeners to have a better understanding of, you know, like what you've accomplished and like, you know, you worked on multiple projects. I think I've read somewhere along the lines of like 85 different products or services, something like that.
That's just the side projects, but yes.
Oh my heavens. I have no idea how you've done it. So I you know, hopefully I can learn something myself, because I mean, I would love to sort of, you know, belt out that type of material, which is great. So like where did that entrepreneurial, you know, I guess coding, programming, coming out with products come from? Was it like something that you've always had as a child, or was it something that came to you from like, you know, like from a parent or schooling, or like where did this all like transpire? How did it start?
I think it all just started when I was really young. So I think we got a first computer in my house when I was about 8 years old. I was the youngest of four kids. So I think my parents bought the computer for my older brother and sisters, but I was the one who kind of got really into it and just started hacking around. I started to write code pretty much when I was about 8 years old. Copying code from magazines that sort of at the start, and then kind of changing the code slightly so it would do what I wanted it to do, and then eventually just writing my own applications after that. And it just started from there. I mean, that was kind of how I got started. And then, you know, I kind of learned a few different languages all on my own just by reading books and stuff like that. And then I went to college for it as well. So I did get a formal education as well.
Okay. So what, in your sort of, I guess, experience, what was like the most beneficial, just sort of going at it every day, like the coding a little bit a day, or was it like the schooling, like, or was it a combination of sort of everything to make you become like familiar with the programming languages and such?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for me, it's just something I really enjoy. So, you know, sort of anytime I had some spare time, anytime I wasn't doing anything else, I was in front of the computer, either playing video games or writing code of my own. And so I just think over the years, it's just, you know, I built, you know, kind of as we talked about, I've built a lot of things. So it just becomes easier and easier and easier, not just the sort of how to write the code part, but also knowing what to write and what not to write and how to structure things, you know, sort of that kind of stuff. Eventually a lot of the things that you write have 80% of the, you know, the sort of features are the same as kind of everything else. And then you've got for each project, you got to customize that 20% of it really. Getting up to speed and writing the 80% just over the years has just become really easy for me, I think.
Okay, no, so that's actually extremely important. So, you know, you touched upon just sort of, you know, being able to constantly, you know, code, whether it's daily, weekly, whatever you have the time. And because you're obviously passionate about it, you stuck to that, and that sort of made you progress. So for myself, I'm sort of learning myself just like brand new. I just started this year, actually. I would say maybe 6-7 months ago. And I'm not sure if difficult's the word or challenging's the word. For me personally, I understand the concepts, but I don't necessarily know how to apply the concepts. So if you gave me like a blank piece of paper and say, okay, I want you to create this, I don't know, this application, start from the beginning, I'd be like, where do I start? I don't really know. So, I mean, I think it's something that I would have to just sort of, you know, trial and error and just kind of get to it. What I found sort of helpful, but then also sort of puts you back a little bit, at least in my case, is, you know, like I'll go on YouTube, for example, and I'll watch a tutorial, but then I just find myself copying that tutorial, not understanding the concept. So then I get in, you know, run into errors, and I'm like, what is happening? What am I doing? And I have nowhere to turn because I'm not really applying it, what I learned. I'm just sort of following someone else's tutorial. So in your opinion, like, is there like a, strategy that would be beneficial? Like just start and just like Google things, or like how would you sort of get over that paradox?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends a little bit what you have access to. Like if you have access to somebody who can kind of answer questions for you and things like that, I think it's a lot easier to learn to code if you can start with an application that's, you know, kind of a functioning application, and then learn to code by changing some of the features or adding a feature, adding functionality, because it gives you all of the framework that you need to kind of just to kind of start.
Okay.
Obviously, if you don't have, you know, somebody who can answer questions and then help you with that kind of starting point, then yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, start small and just, you know, just build the smallest thing that you can. And then that will kind of give you that framework. Now you can think about, rather than think about how you build an overall application, it's more like, okay, how do I add a feature? How do I add this? How do I add that? I mean, it might also be beneficial to actually start looking at like an open source piece of software as well. Like just something in the language that you're trying to learn, because it will kind of show you how other people are architecting things, how people are organizing things, and kind of how they're, you know, interfacing all the different parts of the system together, is just so that you understand the high level concepts of, you know, these are the models and these are the controllers and these are the views. So somebody's already taken the sort of hard work of kind of starting with that blank sheet and kind of put the foundation in place for you. And then you can say, okay, now I can kind of understand how things are organized. Now, if I was going to add some functionality, I would add a controller here, I would add a model here,
Makes sense.
Of those kind of things as well.
Oh, exactly. Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. I appreciate it, because believe me, I need the help. but I'm trying daily, you know, slowly. So I'm sure I'll get there.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I've been coding since I was 8. So yeah, it's easy for me now. But yeah, you know, obviously when I started, I was banging my head against the wall as well.
It's a little bit difficult. Yeah, I know. I hear you. So just touching back on, you know, the products that you've, not the side projects, just the ones that are the 85 or what have you that I came across, was there like a favorite and then like a least favorite, or they're just all like passion projects and they're all like sort of something that you were interested in that time?
No, so it's a mixture of just kind of fun little passion projects that, you know, I just do on my own just because it's an itch I want to scratch. I've also, in that 85, I've kind of helped other people start their startup. So they didn't know how to code, they had an idea, they asked me to work on it, so I kind of helped them out as well. So of that 85, I'd say probably half of them I worked kind of on my own, and just over the years, you know, just kind of scratched an itch, as it were. And then the sort of other half are people, you know, people came to me with an idea and said, hey, I'd love to build this. I'd like to build this into a startup even. You know, I don't know how to code, can you help me? Kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. So I might be reaching out to you in the future. I just want to throw that out there just in case. And so how does that process look like? Do they just like simply contact you and then just sort of pitch an idea and you say, okay, yeah, sure, I think I, you know, I like to help you with that or whatever. Is that sort of how
it works? It's been a mixture again. It's, you know, it's people that I worked with at previous jobs in some cases. It's people I know from online. You know, we just kind of hang out in the same communities, just, you know, answering people's questions and kind of things like that. And then eventually, yeah, you just can't, you know, eventually, because we're all kind of, because we have that kind of maker gene inside of us, where it's like eventually, you know, you just start talking about new ideas and stuff like that. and it's like, well, I'd love to build this, but I don't know how, kind of thing. And, you know, just kind of a random conversation happens, and then, yeah, you just kind of start to explore that idea as well.
That idea, yeah. And so do you ever like try to come up with an idea that's really like maybe bizarre, just to make it like different, like something that maybe hasn't been done before, or something that's like far-fetched? And if you pitch to someone, might say, I don't think it's a good idea. But I mean, good. Oftentimes bad ideas turn out to be good ideas. You know, they revolutionize things sometimes.
No, right? I think a lot of times people, especially in kind of like the indie hacker space and stuff, or, you know, they focus a lot on how do I make an idea that is going to make honey, because, you know, I don't like my job or whatever and I want a new job. But, you know, so those kind of things. And a lot of my ideas are just, this is never going to make any money ever. But it's a piece of software that I want, and it's a piece of software that I will use, or, you know, it's kind of a website or something like that, that I know I will enjoy.
Sure.
And that's often enough, because, you know, it's, you know, with these kind of side projects, in a large number of cases, it is just, like I said, it's just a hobby. So sure. I'm not really concerned about, like, is this going to be the next, you know, big startup or anything like that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense too, though, because then, you know, that financial sort of monetary, I guess, I mean, for some, it might be some pressure or some concern, right. You know, that's something that, okay, maybe makes you work towards that goal in a more timely fashion, because you're not worried about that aspect, which is also important, by the way.
Yeah, and especially if you're getting started, if you're learning how to write code, if you're learning to build applications, yeah, it's cool to have a good idea, you know, a new idea as well that you think people will pay you to kind of use that software. But it's very, I mean, the main reason that there's like a million to-do apps out there is because because that's the kind of thing it's easy to kind of get started with that, you know, everybody needs, right? And but a lot of the questions about how you architect those things, and the questions about how you put the information on the screen and all that kind of stuff has already been worked through. So you're just going through the sort of process of starting with that blank page and taking all those sorts and kind of exploring how that works and kind of how you implement it. And, you know, and it's a good way to learn how to write code, how to write an application, because you're having to think less about what's new and what's unique and all of those kind of things. And you're just kind of exploring the actual process itself.
Sure, sure. Oh, perfect. And that makes total sense. Okay. So, and then I also read something about, I think you were the runner up in Product Hunt.
I've been the runner up twice and the winner once of the Product Hunt Maker of the Year Award. Yep.
Oh, congratulations. And so what made the difference between the runner up and then the winner? Was it just...
It's just, I mean, they base it off of, so nobody knows the exact formula that they have, but it's based on like the number of products that you launch, the number of upvotes that they all receive, and how much interaction they all receive, and sort of that kind of stuff. So there's a magic formula that they have each year where they figure out what's the best. Well, actually, some of the categories are just purely based on the sort of number of upvotes that they get, and so that kind of thing. But for Maker of the Year, and I think the Community Person of the Year as well, they take into account a few other things as well. So it's not just purely based. Well, obviously with a person, there's no upvoting on an individual person.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's based on how many things that you made and how many upvotes they got and how many comments and interactions and sort of all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. And so for them to, I mean, once you became like the winner, was it like with one specific product that you've made, or was it just multiple things throughout the year?
No, I think it was just multiple. I think I just launched everybody that year.
It was like one launch per month or something like that. It was, you know,
it's actually more than that. I think
it was more than
like,
that. Hey, wow.
I think I did something like 18, I think, that year.
Oh my heavens. Well, you know what? Good for you. That's interesting. And like I say, hopefully I can sort of, okay, well, I'm not going to catch up to you because you're long gone now, but even if I do one in a year, I'd be happy. But that's fantastic. Okay.
Well, and so it's one the first year and then to the second year, and
exactly
for the year after that.
It's like slowly, you know, slowly but surely we'll get there.
Yeah, I mean, I started coding at 8. I don't think I launched my first, you know, I don't think I publicly released my first piece of software until I was about 14. It took me a while as well.
That's okay. Like, yeah. And so I just out of curiosity, like, what language were you coding when you were like 8?
I think we had a Commodore 64 back then. Basic was my first language that I learned. And then I learned things like I learned assembly and C and Pascal, I think, was my favorite language earlier on.
Now, like, do you have a favorite now in terms of language, or is it just sort of?
I don't really have a favorite. I mean, I do most of my work right now is in PHP as it stands right now, but I've done stuff in Rails and Node as well. I do kind of a lot is on in those three languages.
Okay, perfect. You sort of seeing some of the things you worked on, I noticed that you came out with a new, I guess, product or service, which is called Pod Hunt. Can you just sort of give the listeners maybe just like a summary of what that is and like what it does and what the intention behind that new product is?
Yeah, so basically it's a service that will it's trying to make the process of finding new podcasts and listen to a little bit easier. There's, you know, depending on which reports you listen to, there's somewhere between 750,000 and 800,000 podcasts out there. And about somewhere between, you know, 250,000 to like 400,000 active podcasts themselves. So we're active meaning that they published an episode in the last 90 days or so.
Wow.
And so that's a lot of podcasts every month to come out. So you can't listen to all of them.
No.
So which are the really awesome episodes that you should listen to? You know, which are the really cool podcasts that, that kind of might interest you? And so there's obviously like leaderboards that you can visit. And the problem that I found was that when I went to them, they had the same 200, 100 podcasts on them. Like they were all the same. It was always the top 200 was, you know, all the famous people out there who had just launched their podcasts and getting millions of downloads a year and stuff like that. But but that wasn't the kind of things I was looking for. You know, I listen to Joe Rogan and Conan O'Brien. I listen to all the NPR shows occasionally as well. But I wanted some other things. And so the idea of Podhunt came, which was actually inspired by, so Product Hunt back in the day actually used to let you submit books and video games and podcasts as well.
Oh, okay.
And after a while, they just shut down all those other things and they saw that they could concentrate on kind of applications and software instead. And so the idea for Product Hunt was just like, well, why don't we have something like Product Hunt, but for podcasts exclusively.
Okay.
And I had a few friends who also used to be on Product Hunt a lot, and they all said the same kind of thing. So about 3 months ago, I started working on Pod Hunt. It's a daily leaderboard where people can come to the website, they submit a specific episode of a podcast that they've heard, and then people can upvote that, and whatever's on the sort of list for the day, whatever's top is according to the audience, at least the most the best podcast to listen to. So you can hopefully find something new and something that you wouldn't find anywhere else.
Sure. And so the upvoting, is that sort of like a Reddit form, like you just click and vote that way? Is that how that works?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And so is the podcasts that are there, are they uploaded by users or are they uploaded by producers of their show themselves?
It's a mixture. I mean, some people are submitting their own episodes, which is absolutely fine. I mean, I'm kind of happy if people do.
Sure.
And then in other cases, just somebody heard an episode and they're like, this is really awesome, I want to share it with other people. And so they're coming in and submitting as well. I mean, I obviously at the beginning, there wasn't a lot of audience on the website. So I was submitting a lot of them at the beginning, but sure. More recently it's a mixture of people. It's a mixture of hosts and just people who are into podcasting a lot.
Okay. And so the process basically is like for myself, as an example, for the listeners out there. So I'm interested, let's just say I go to the website, I create an account, and then how does that like process work? I just upload the episode, or like I upload just the title, like how does that?
Yeah, so the way that was, so right now, just to kind of combat spam a little bit, because I just want to make sure people aren't just submitting random stuff.
Sure.
So once you have an account, you can just kind of reach out to me on Twitter, or if you reach out to the Pod Hunt app account on Twitter, I can authorize your account so that you can submit episodes. But once you have an account that can submit episodes, I use the iTunes database to kind of add a layer of organization. So basically you would search for the title of the podcast that you want to submit an episode from.
Okay, so
I search the iTunes database, give you a list of the podcasts that match that search term that you used. And then once you find the podcast that you're in, that you want to submit from, you click on it, and then it will show you all the episodes from that podcast. And it will then take you to a form that has like the title and all those things that kind of already filled out.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you just hit submit, and then that's it.
And that's it. It goes up. Okay. And so then, is there any like advertising functionality at this point, or not really? It's just straight up, just submit it.
Not really. It's just straight up submit it. Okay. At some point, once we have more of an audience and stuff, hopefully we'll kind of add that kind of stuff in afterwards. But yeah, at this point, I just want to get as many people on the platform, as many people submitting their episodes as they can, and as many people kind of uploading stuff as well.
Perfect. Okay. And so, you mentioned sort of previously a little bit in terms of like, I guess, validation, like from friends and maybe colleagues that you know who sort of requested these feature. And in terms of like, I know it's very early and a few months in, have you seen like a steady growth sort of trajectory right now?
Yeah, it's doing amazingly well. I've been really happy with the way that it's been received. I'm just going to pull some stats up right now.
Sure.
I can share those with you, but I started working on it on July the 25th.
Okay.
So it's still pretty young.
Yeah, it's less than 3 months now.
Yeah.
Less than 3 months. Wow.
That's just working. I think I launched it like a month afterwards officially. So,
oh wow.
I think July the 1st, I'm just going to pull up stats from July the 1st to today. It's kind of had its launch on Product Hunt and sort of
okay. those
kind of things. That's kind of helped to kind of kind of attract an early audience. So we've had about 10,000 people come to the website itself.
Okay.
They've done about 47,000 page views, which is pretty good. And then in terms of like user accounts and things like that, so we have about 680 people have an account on PodHunt itself.
Oh wow, that's actually really good considering. I mean, 2 months of age since it's been actually launched, which is good. And so when you use Product Hunt to launch, did that? I mean, of course, that's going to boost some in terms of traffic. But did that actually result in users sign up using that strategy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, it's a matter of finding the right people. I mean, I think I shared it around a little bit. It got posted to, there's a newsletter in the podcasting space called Pod News.
Okay.
I think they've got something like 10,000 subscribers on their email list. And they shared it even when I hadn't actually officially launched it yet. They kind of snuck in and I had a soft launch that I wasn't really expecting. And so that, I think that really helped to get like the really early, I think I got the first 100 or 150 or so accounts from just from being included in their kind of in their email.
Sure. And so in that initial stage, was it like a beta stage, or was it just sort of launched, ready to go?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I kind of done a soft launch at that. I mean, I was kind of ready for a soft launch. And when I say soft launch, it's like all the features and functionality is there, but obviously you want to try and see if it works at scale. And if people that, aren't familiar with the idea and stuff,
sure.
if they come to the website, are they understanding what the website is about and kind of how it works and sort of those kind of things as well. So it's never going to be finished because I'm always adding new features
of
to
course.
It.
But it
had enough features where I was kind of happy to kind of have people come to it essentially.
And use it. Okay, perfect. And so in terms of building an audience, it could be any product, it doesn't have to be Pod on, but if it is, it's fine as well. Did you or do you try and grow the audience like beforehand, like just so you come up with an idea, you think about it, like, oh, I think this is valuable if I put it out there. Do you start to communicate that to build a community already, or just kind of wait until sort of the bare bones are in place and then start?
It depends a little bit on what the idea is and kind of how long I think it will take to actually build it.
Sure.
So I tend to err on the side of it's better to build something and then to show people, just because I think it's easier for people to understand what you're trying to do, what you're trying to build, if they can actually see, a small if kind of a small instance of it, because you can talk about your idea, you can talk about what you want to build, and I think, you know, people have a very hard time understanding exactly what it is and how it works and sort of that kind of thing.
I agree, because I know I hear someone like, you know, I listen to different podcasts and things like that. And I've heard one recently where they mentioned, you know, like building a landing page and going to your local Starbucks and just, you know, asking a stranger, you know, can I borrow 10 seconds of your time? Can you tell me 10 seconds, what's this website about? And then like literally after 10 seconds, close the laptop shut. And the answers are typically nowhere near what the creator intended. So of course, that's like, to your point, it's hard to explain it where you're trying to get, you think you have the message across, but on their end, they're interpreting it a whole different way. So, I mean, I think it's a good thing to have like a bare bone product, or at least something that you're happy with to put out there. So you just can, you know, can go ahead and use it, which I think is interesting, you know, which is good.
I mean, like you said, I mean, that the sort of only caveat there is like, it depends on how long you think it will take, right? Like obviously for someone like me, who's got lots of experience, sure. You know, I can launch something in kind of a few weeks and it's kind of, you know, kind of up and operational. If it's going to take you longer than that, if it's going to take you, you know, a few months even to kind of build that, I mean, it's worthwhile. You know, I would still err on the side of share less information and just put up a landing page that just has like the name of the product and like a short little tagline about kind of what it's supposed to do, just okay. So that you can start to kind of build up an audience who might be interested in that thing. You know, try, you know, I wouldn't spend a lot of time to kind of build a big flashy landing page that has lots of pictures and text on it and stuff.
Sure,
because as you build it, you're going to change the features and functionality as well, right?
Exactly.
So you're building, you know, there's no point putting it on a landing page if you actually don't know what the features and functionality are yet.
And I did that myself where I've built a landing page, not like coding it, by the way, just using like, you know, those
right.
Like WordPress or whatever. And I put so much time into it. And at the end, I'm like, there was no like value there. And I'm like, what am I doing? And I had to just cancel it. I just kind of like, you know, walked away from it, which is okay. It was a learning experience for me,
right.
Although it probably consumed like, I don't know, weeks of my time, sort of sporadically trying to like, you know, do this and do that with it, but that's fine. So yeah, I think it's a good idea to have something really like minimalistic put out there initially, have, you know, just somewhere for you just to go and at least see, okay, this is what it's called. This is what I think it's going to do. Let's see what evolves from this.
And then just even as you're out there, you know, if you're hanging out on forums or if you go to a local meetup and somebody asks you what you're working on, yeah, at least you have somewhere where you can send them and say, hey, I'm working on this. If you want to find out more, you can sign up here, you know, sort of that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Just so that you can start to build up that audience. Now, obviously, it's not going to lead to like thousands of people on your mailing list or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, even having that first 10 or 20 people is going to be super, it's going to be super helpful.
Yeah. I mean, in my case, any user that signs up, you're like, yes, it's so exciting. Like, it really, it is. And I can see like how the bug would hit you, because it's really like rewarding, right? First of all, it's something that, you know, in my example, I'll just use my example, something that I like to do, number one. And so I'm passionate about it. And then as users sort of, or customers or clients or listeners or whoever sign up, it kind of validates that for me, which then makes me like, you know, it gives me like a boost of like, oh my God, I'm so happy this is working, not only for myself, but for everybody else too. And that's like, you know, important. And that keeps me going. So to your point, I think it's extremely important just to like have something there so you can kind of see what that interaction is like and maybe benefit from those type of feedback from potential, you know, customers, clients, listeners, whatever.
I think that's really important too, because I think a lot of people lose steam on their idea. Like, you know, right at the beginning, you have this massive kind of head rush about, I've got this idea, I'm going to work on it. And you spend, you know, you kind of run around trying to work on it. And then as the days and weeks pass from that initial kind of inspiration point, it gets harder and harder to say, oh, I need to make time to work on this. I need to add this feature and stuff. But if you do see those little, you know, even if it's once a week, if somebody signs up and now you've got somebody else who's kind of interested in your idea, I think that can kind of really help you and say, I got to, you know, now I've got like five people on mailing list who are going to be interested, and five becomes 10, and it just kind of makes it easier to, and you know, you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like when I launched this thing, it's not like I don't have anybody interested. Now I've got 5 or 10 or, you know, 20 people on the email list who I can kind of share the sort of early ideas with as well.
Exactly. And I think it makes you accountable too. You know, so this way you have someone who's expecting something. So something that you've put out there that you sort of, I guess, you know, maybe didn't promise it, but you kind of promised by putting it out there. And so, so that potential, whoever's interested is like, well, you know, I signed up for this thing. I'm expecting it. When's it coming? So it keeps you, yeah, I think it keeps you accountable, which is good too. So what can you share any like future plans for PodHunt? Or at this stage, I know you're just trying to like gain as much or acquire as much users as possible, but let's just say that goes really well. Is there like anything sort of that you've thought about now, or are you just sort of taking it one step at a time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of just taking it one step at a time, but I mean, I think right now it's a website, just cause that was easy just to spin up and, you know, have it work across, you know, all people who are interested in podcasting and things like that. But I think eventually, you know, most people do still listen to podcasts in an app of some kind, you know, be it Apple Podcasts or, you know, kind of one of those apps. So I think eventually it will have to be an app at some point. So that's probably kind of next next year-y, I think at some point will be okay. Just to kind of think about how, you know, what an app experience for PodHunt would look like as well.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Mobs, I appreciate your time. We're just about out of time. And I want to just say thank you very much for giving me opportunity to have you on the show. I think it's been extremely beneficial. Can you just tell the people, the listeners, where they can find more information about either yourself, projects you're working on, PodHunt, etc.?
Yeah. So PodHunt is podhunt.app. That's the best place if you're into podcasts, which I hope you are. That's probably the best place to go. For me, I'm most active on Twitter. So it's twitter.com and then it's at Mubasher Iqbal is my name. And then if you want to see all of the 85 projects or 85 side projects that I worked on, you can go to iworkedon.com, which is a side project to track all of my side projects.
Yes. And let me tell you, folks, there's quite a bit, but interesting. And I highly suggest you check out that website. I highly suggest you also check out PodHunt. I myself am interested, Mub. So I am going to personally sign up myself. All the information that Mub sort of mentioned in terms of contact information will be in the show notes. So feel free to check that out as well.
So just a really fun little side story, sure. Just to kind of help people. So I worked on is the fourth iteration of what I planned to build with I worked on. It's only actually listed on I worked on once, but it's actually version 4 of what I actually planned to build.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so I worked on was supposed to, I mean, originally the sort of idea was to build this kind of this LinkedIn replacement. Instead of just listing where you worked and kind of who you worked with, it was meant to be, well, these are the actual things that I worked on in terms of sites and applications and kind of things like that. And I built it way too early. just as a way of just to kind of tell people, like, the first time you try something, it
sure
could work, but chances are it won't, and that's exactly. Okay. You just keep on trying.
yeah, exactly. Because I did go through that, and I did see, like, to the right of, you know, whatever it is you're working on, you know, it said, like, you know, still alive or less involved or like dead. So I mean, not to be, I kind of was like, oh, okay, well, I'm not the only one that suffers these end of fate types of things. So it's actually, I think it's a really good idea, and maybe even for like individuals who are perhaps interested in sort of keeping a tally of what they've been doing, maybe not necessarily coding something, but anything really in life. If you have that type of list that you can reference, that gives you sort of like a perspective. I'm like, okay, this is what I did accomplish. Amazing. This didn't work, but that's okay. Look what else I accomplished. So I agree with you, and thank you for sharing that. I think that's an important takeaway for the listeners. So I hope everybody has the opportunity to look at that and sort of, you know, maybe mimic that and enjoy that type of information.
Yeah, I'll say just one final thing is, like, I mean, everything that I've built over the years, you know, I've used as a way to learn a new skill or just have some fun as well, right? Like, it, you don't have to build stuff just to launch it and make money from it and all that kind of stuff as well, right? It's yeah, you know, even if it fails, as long as you've learned a new skill, if you've learned something new in the process of actually building and launching it, that is just as valuable a reward as somebody sending you, you know, $5 a punt or something like that instead.
I totally agree. And thank you very much for that as well. So I hope folks, again, I hope you take the time to look at where you can contact MUBS. Pod Hunt is there as well. And I'll, again, link that into the show notes. So feel free to have a look at that. Again, MUBS, thank you so much for your time. I truly, truly appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care. Thanks now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.